If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
Then what does that make me? I'm Ben Harrison.
My tag team partner in this podcast, Legion of Doom.
You get him dazed by the ropes and I hit him with a folding chair.
Well, one of us needs to decide which one of us is outside of the ring, like stretching their arm in to get tagged, while the other guy is inside the ring just getting jobbed by a bunch of folding chairs.
Yeah. I feel like the rules of getting tagged in so often just go out the window in those things.
Yeah. Did you ever watch wrestling, like growing up or anything? Was that your thing or no?
It was never, like, totally my thing, but there was a period in high school where I made a point of keeping abreast of it because a lot of the kids at school had thoughts. So just to know what was being discussed at the lunch table.
How do you do, fellow kids?
There was, like, Triple H and D-Generation X.
Oh, yeah.
And things happening.
X-Pac,
yeah. I remember that guy.
You got your X-Pac, you got your China, you got your Triple H.
Yeah, I just remember being, you know, like I've never been that strong in any of my personal convictions, but just feeling like these are people I wouldn't want in my house, so why am I turning on the television when they have it on?
Ben Harrison, not strong enough for kayfabe.
I didn't even like Steve Austin, Adam.
Oh, boy. So you must really have some feelings about all the wrestling drops I sprinkle throughout our show.
Well, mostly they just go over my head.
Ben, it's one of the earliest pods I can remember recording. It is, it's 8:30 a.m. my time.
Comedy o'clock.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm feeling pretty mentally challenged right now. to bring the funny. So I thought instead I'd totally cop out and go to a letter. What do you think?
Letters. We get letters. We get lots and lots of letters.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
This letter comes...
Oh, this is a paper one.
Oh,
did
yeah.
Did you print out an email, Adam? Or
no, this came inside of one of those cardboard postal service envelopes.
A lettre en papier.
Sure. It came inside a queso.
A pain au chocolat.
Letters from our friend Alfred. Goes like this. Adam and Ben, I discovered your podcast last September while I was listening to another Maximum Fun podcast, and I was intrigued. But I also said, no, Alfred, you already listened to too many podcasts. But over a few weeks, the dulcet tones of Dark Materia's music wormed its way into my brain. In an instant, I was hooked. Listening to you guys crack wise about TNG made me laugh out loud while walking my dog and while at work. And it reminded me how much I love Star Trek. In October, things took a turn. After being together for 10 years and married for 4 of them, my wife left me. After a frantic move and starting a new life on my own, I sank into a deep depression and started to go to some very dark and scary places. Through it all, the only thing that could break through my depression and sadness was you guys and your insinuations of a sinister relationship between Picard and Wesley, Pulaski's alcoholism, Riker's sexual prowess, and of course, Uxbridge's thriving real doll business. Anyway, thank you both. Without knowing it, you really helped me get through some dark times. Without you guys making me laugh with your dick and fart jokes, I might not be here today. If you're ever...
Oh, man.
Yeah. Thanks for all the laughs, and keep up the great work. Sincerely, Alfred. Occasionally, Ben and I will complain about the struggle to keep up with our pace of programming, but man, stuff like this makes it all worth it. Like, to know that the show is reaching some people who need it, I think makes a big, big deal to you and me, Ben. So, thanks so much, Alfred.
And we're really glad you're still here with us. I mean... I think that that's no joke, and if you're somebody that's out there listening that has that struggle, like please get help. Like, you know, we can do our part in giving you something to laugh about, but also like medicine works and talk therapy works, and there's no shame in it at all. So yeah, like we need you guys.
Yeah, don't go anywhere.
Well, on that note, Adam, do you want to get into the funnest episode of Star Trek ever?
Yeah, boy, this is a real wing dinger, isn't it?
Whatever that is, it's season 6, episode 11, Chain of Command, part 2.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
If you don't remember, this is part 2 of an episode featuring the Federation's greatest Cardassian diplomat. Now in command of the Entrepreneur. Ben, I just don't understand how this guy got the rep that he did. Captain Jellicoe, not great at his job.
Jellicoe spends most of the first episode of this episode getting his pants pulled down by his Cardassian counterpart. But before we get to that, we have a cold open that is a scene where they've got the camera on like a crazy wide lens handheld, and the Cardassians are administering doses of sodium pentothal to Captain Jean-Luc Picard. And he's letting details slip.
Okay, I'll talk.
He's not just saying his Federation ID badge number and his first and last name, as I think most POWs are trained to do. He's actually giving his mother's maiden name, his last four of his soch.
In fourth grade, I stole my Uncle Max's toupee and I glued it on my face when I played Moses in my Hebrew school play.
He's kind of spilling.
Yeah, that's all you need to get into somebody's online banking, right?
It's a little concerning.
And he also gives up the names of the other people on his team, which comes back to bite him in the ass later in the episode.
Yeah, that's not a good look.
This is a terrifying scene. The Cardassians can ply him for truth.
Hit puree!
There's the tension and terror of knowing that Picard is very far from home and basically in a hole where he cannot be found. And then there's the like compounding part of that, which is knowing that the captain of the Enterprise right now does not really express any compunction about not trying to get him, you know?
Like, he is a commanding officer that is entirely willing to have casualties.
Yeah.
Like, he is Worf's kind of guy.
Yeah.
And if Picard is lost to save the Federation, Jellicoe doesn't give a flying fuck, basically.
And that's the thing that really works this episode, I think. It would be one thing if it's like, you know, point, counterpoint. Point, Picard's in trouble. Counterpoint, they're trying to rescue him. But you don't get that for a lot of this episode. Like, it really seems like he's lost and no one's even trying.
The opening Enterprise scene is kind of the continuation of the negotiations that they were having in the last episode. And they kind of...
they're kind of like picking up 5 minutes before we left off with this. It's like, you know, I think that we can stop this war as long as everybody stops rattling their sabers. And Golomek is like,
then how do you explain the fact that a Federation team launched an unprovoked assault on Cardassian territory less than 14 hours ago?
And they're like, bah!
This Gull is right. This Gull is right the whole time. Like, Jellicoe has never been right.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And the contrast couldn't be greater. I mean, we've lost a seasoned diplomat, an intellectual, a guy known for making smart, reasonable decisions, and we've replaced him with a guy that's all bluster, who's kind of an idiot.
Yeah, it's a familiar feeling, Adam.
It sure is.
The other thing I loved about this scene, I mean, like, because that, as a viewer, you feel very helpless, you know? You are watching the, there was the peaceful transition of power, and now people who are unqualified and unprepared to do the job are, you know, learning on the fly.
Yeah.
But they still look like the Federation, you know? It's Jellicoe sitting there with Riker and Troy, and we cut across to the other side of the table, and these Cardassians are in these, like, Batman costumes, and the lighting on that side of the table is very toppy.
Yeah.
Like, the Federation people have nice diffuse light on their faces. You can see their whole faces, and they have, you know, the Cardassians have this loaf that makes them kind of, they have large brows, and so when you light them like this, they really have skull faces, and they're extra, extra terrifying looking. And I don't think that they've really done this lighting on them so far. So it's really startling when you see them.
Yeah, I noticed this part as well. Those skull eye holes, they look like they represent death visually.
And the Cardassians are right, but they are also acting in bad faith. You know, like, they are saying things like, you know, Picard attacked this settlement
and killed over 55 men, women, and children.
This is all part of a Cardassian plot to sort of extract information that they think Picard has and take over a Federation system, right?
Yeah, and his leverage that he's trying to use is like, look, if you just admit that Picard's mission was sanctioned by the Federation, then, of course, like, the wartime protections for prisoners of war would be extended to him. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, he's basically challenging them to fly in the face of their Mission Impossible briefing tape that said, if you get captured or killed, the secretary will deny any knowledge of your actions.
Yeah, and Jellicoe just lets the tape self-destruct. He's unwilling to admit that at this point.
What evidence do you have of that?
Jellicoe is definitely in a corner at this point, because that leverage would work. And if it came out publicly that the Federation had done this covert assault, they would look really bad, you know? Like, they would look like the counter to the moral example they're trying to set.
So that happens, and the Cardassians leave, and Riker basically what the fucks Jellicoe after they left. He's like,
I can't believe you're willing to sacrifice Captain Picard's life as a negotiation tactic.
The tensions increase to the degree that Jellicoe has to relieve him on the spot.
You're relieved.
It's pretty intense. Like, Riker is off the job. For real.
I may have Crimson Tide on the brain, Ben, but do you think... Do you think Riker at any point considers mutiny? He would have the support of a lot of the crew, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem for Riker is that Jellicoe, like, definitely has the blessing of the Admiralty, and the Admiralty does not appear to be nubbined in this matter.
He's got Jason Robards on his side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if he creates a hell of a mess... The chances are not great that they'll let him retire early.
God damn. Can you imagine? Like, I can see the episode in my head where Riker is Hunter. They go to the weapons storeroom. Like, they take back the ship. He's got Worf on his side.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Give me an order, sir.
Yeah.
A warrior's order.
Instead, they banish Riker to his quarters. And that is that for a while for him.
Back in torture chamber numero uno, Madrid like shows up for work with like a thermos and like a hard boiled egg for breakfast.
Like the Stanley style screw top with the little coffee mug on top.
Yeah, he's like, "How'd you sleep, buddy?" And Picard has been like hung up from the ceiling all evening.
Yeah, he's sort of endured a form of crucifixion where he can't put his arms down. They light Gul Madrid here behind the desk in a really interesting way, and what I believe to be an intentional way. Half of him is warm light and half of him is cold light.
Yeah, it's he's such an interesting character because he has decided in the cold open that Picard doesn't know what he was hoping Picard would know. You know, like he had a way to get that information with the sodium pentothal.
Yeah. And it turns from like a mission into just like sadism, right?
Yeah. And that's a scary idea, right? Like the idea that a military would have a guy like this who has an office and like people working for him, you know, like
yeah.
He has guards and a staff and, you know, he's getting paid every day to just wantonly torture Picard.
Yeah, and that the normalcy that you're describing, like of business as usual going on around him while torture is happening in the room, is expressed both professionally and also like personally. His daughter's in the room sometimes, just like hanging out with the family pet. Like the torture is just a thing that happens in their presence in a very horrifying way.
You know, Patrick Stewart gets a lot of credit for this episode and well deserved because he is nude for the majority of the episode and, you know, looks worse and worse. Like I was really impressed with the way they did the makeup in this, but you know, his performance gets like more and more desperate, but it's still Picard the entire time. It's very much the lettered captain who is making reasonable arguments against an unreasonable person, like trying to find a chink in the armor of sadism.
I think this episode might have the best dialogue of any episode that I can remember. Everything is so efficiently said and stated perfectly. And I don't mean that just for Picard. I mean Madrid. I mean, Jellicoe and Riker, like across the board, I felt the dialogue was as good as it's ever been.
It really sizzles and it's tense without being arch.
Yeah.
It's operatic without being silly or flashy.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You described the physicality of Picard's performance here. I mean, we've sort of made fun of J.L. Pipes up until now. He's fully transformed into J.L. Buns. And it shouldn't go without saying that at this moment in television history, it was sort of a big deal to show sideburns, even. You know, like the Andy Sipowicz butt shot did not occur that much earlier than this year, than the year that this episode came out, you know? So for a syndicated show to show this much butt, I think, was a big deal.
They also showed the part of his body where his leg meets his torso. Like,
yeah.
Like they are centimeters from showing some nuck. And that's like, I mean, that's as intimate as a body part gets without being ding-dong.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird episodes where you're kind of torn between admiring how great Patrick Stewart looks with his shirt off and the horrid emotions of the scene. I feel the same way when I watch Jurassic Park and they get Ian Malcolm on the table with his shirt off. He's like, his life is very much in danger from the injuries he's sustained, but you're like, it's looking good. Pretty sexy for a chaotician. I can see what Laura Dern sees in you, buddy.
So the rest of the episode, we're going back and forth. We're seeing Picard diminished throughout, and we're seeing Jellicoe become more desperate in his attempts to I guess, stop war, but it doesn't seem very clear that that is his intention, right? I think, to a certain extent, his intention is to save face, either Federation face or his own face.
Yeah, he is. I mean, this is a total type of powerful guy. Is like, it's about the appearance of success rather than actual measurable success. And like, when Riker starts voicing strong opinions against him is when he gets when Riker gets stripped of his command. I mean, it's because he is questioning the decisions of the captain that Riker is taken out of the command structure. And Riker's argument is like,
as first officer, it is my responsibility to point out any actions that may be mistakes by a commanding officer, sir.
Yeah, that's the XO's function from the start. Safety and well-being of the crew, check and balance on the captain.
And it's like, Commander Riker, you are relieved. And, you know, don't make me toss you in the brig also. Smash cut to Data walking into the ready room in a red shirt.
Yeah.
It is very fast and unceremonious.
Sure is. It's almost as shocking of a visual as it is to see Jellicoe behind the ready room desk. Like, to see someone who's not Picard in command is one form of visual shock. But to see Data in red is almost equal to that.
Do you think that somebody in the costume department was like, do you think we can get away with putting Data in a front zip? Because we just need this for like 10 minutes of scene, right? Like, we don't need to make a full $3,000 back zip for him, do we?
That's a big decision. How long do you think Jellicoe even thought about the decision of who to make as his XO? Like, I think he knew from the start he wanted Data to be the guy because Data's always on his arm, like the entire time.
He walked the ship with Data in the last episode.
He's sort of the perfect choice.
Yeah.
He's the only one who can keep up with Jellicoe, too, I feel like, because Jellicoe operates in such a quick and scattered fashion.
Yeah, he is a high-tempo commander.
Yeah.
I mean, Geordi seems to be, like, down to do what Jellicoe is asking. Like, Geordi is definitely a character who wears his emotions on his sleeves, and if he's being asked to do something he doesn't want to do, is, like, full of sighs and side-eye. Like, that was totally evident in the last episode. And in this episode, he is really, like, marching to Jellicoe's beat. He's made a decision to just, like, roll with this, despite what's happened to Riker and despite his initial misgivings, which I thought was an interesting direction his character went. I mean, maybe they just didn't feel like they had the time to deal with that. Like, this is another argument for the three-parter, I feel like.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the crew has a window of opportunity to do the I am Spartacus thing when Riker goes down, and that window is lost almost immediately. Like, right. And I think a big part of that is Geordi falling into line. Like, he was, you could count him as part of the resistance in the first half of this episode, and now he's sort of company man Geordi.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about him and his character in this part of the episode is that he remains close enough to Jellicoe to be an instrument, you know, to recommend that Riker is the guy to fly a mission later on, like to be in the right position to sort of insert that kind of resistance, I think is good, right?
It is, yeah, and I think that
if you resist too much, you lose the ability to affect change.
Right, he stays in Jellicoe's good graces. He is trustworthy.
It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's base. Now, you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth. You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
This is when I think the torture scenes sort of take a turn, and there stops being any pretense that there's information extraction at work. And what Madred explains to Picard is that they've installed a device in his body. There's like a big scar on his chest, and they've installed a device in his body that will allow Madred to like point a TV remote at him and inflict any amount of pain he wants in any part of Picard's body.
Forgive me. I don't enjoy this, but I must demonstrate. It will make everything clearer.
All right, thank you guys on the five, and welcome to Hannity, and this is a Fox News alert.
The deal is Picard is going to have to tell Madrid that there are five lights above his desk, when in fact there are only four.
I wanted to know more about this controller, Ben. Can you really flip through the scroll wheel and select, like, hand?
Yeah, like, how fine,
or shoulder,
how finely,
or dick?
Yeah, could you do, like pinky finger on left hand, or is it just kind of, like, regional?
Yeah, like, how granular can you get?
I don't know.
It's sort of an amazing technological feat in a terrifying sort of way.
Yeah.
Like, all you see is a scar on his collarbone, and that's it. I mean, and Picard's no stranger to terrible implants. This has got to count as among the worst.
Mm-hmm. He had that date in France that one time with that lady. Those are some terrible implants.
That guy playing that that dick accordion. That dildordian. Yeah.
And this is a crazy series of scenes, because it's like such a pointless thing. It's just Madrid working to break Picard's spirit. Say that there are five lights, deny reality, you know, say 2 + 2 = 5, and you have some hope of this stopping. And like, he keeps tempting Picard. It's also kind of biblical in that way, where he'll say, like, okay, you know, this is clearly not working. You can take off. We'll just do this to your friend, the lady. And Picard is forced to, you know, turn around and resubject himself to the torture, because he thinks that he is preventing Beverly from undergoing the same thing.
And for Madrid to, like, ask him to say the words that he wants to stay, like, that's as rock bottom as it gets, right? It's,
yeah,
pretty brutal.
It's really brutal.
There's this back and forth. It's like Madrid inhabits the good cop and the bad cop at the same time. Like, he's turning on the torture device for hours on Picard, and then he's also giving him, like, the Ortolan breakfast.
Right.
There's this emotional whiplash happening that serves as its own form of torture as well.
Well, and it's really interesting, because it exposes Madrid to some, like, Madrid winds up being vulnerable to Picard in this very subtle way that Picard picks up on and uses for all it's worth, which is that Madrid has, like, transmitted some personal information about himself to Picard, and Picard turns that into a status flip. Madrid has been, you know, stepping on his balls and cutting his clothes off the entire time. And Picard, after hearing this story of Madrid's desperate childhood, kind of, you know, armchair psychoanalyzes him and says that he pities him. And that, like, really fucking sends Madrid off the handle.
There's a moment here where, you know, between Madrid's daughter and Picard, the daughter takes off, and Madrid and Picard are having a talk about it, and Picard's like,
when children learn to devalue others, they can devalue anyone, including their parents.
And Madrid is maybe his most furious at this point, and he calls Picard a whole bunch of things, including arrogant.
Yeah.
And it just made me think, like, that thing where an intelligent person calls someone out on their bullshit and gets called arrogant for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it. That is such a fucking contemporary thing, isn't it?
It really, like, is.
Like, don't you call me stupid. That is a timeless conflict. And it really, like, made me sit straight up watching the episode. Like, God, this episode is so good. It almost throws away a moment like this, and it ends up being, like, one of the most poignant scenes in the whole thing.
There's so much that is predictive about this episode, I feel like.
Yeah, how could they know?
My love is a fever, longing still for that which longer nurseth the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
The deal on the Enterprise is that they've figured out that there's, like, some hull damage on the Cardassian ship that indicates that it's been subjected to a certain type of nebula, and there's one that happens to be really close to the planet that Madred has been asking Picard about the whole time, Minas Corva.
It's maybe the smartest thing that Jellicoe has done the entire two episodes. He's like, yeah, Geordi,
this is some hot some captaining.
We need some kind of edge. Is there any way you could tell me where these Cardassian ships have been? Be cool about it. Like, don't be all flashy with the sensors, but like, see if you can get a read on these ships and tell me. And it turns out that they've been in some poopy. And they can tell where the poopy came from.
Yeah. They've narrowed this poopy down.
Yeah.
And so this is where they realize that they need a hot fighter jock to pilot the Previa that they're going to send into the nebula, because Captain Jellicoe's plan is that they'll drop mines off in front of all of the Cardassian ships that are hiding in wait, waiting to invade this planet, and they'll be forced to back off slowly. So he's like, he wants Geordi to do it, and Geordi's like, I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Geordi has one of the lines of dialogue that I feel like off screen has been said a couple thousand times, which is,
man, you want is Commander Riker.
Yeah.
If you want to pierce a warm nebula with a mine.
He's the best there is.
Since when is Riker the best there is as a pilot?
God, I don't know. Since it's a convenient necessity for this episode.
If it had been, we need somebody who's great at saucer separation, we would have had some game tape on that.
Yeah, you know, if driving a shuttle was about giving it verbal instructions, I think this would be a pretty credible piece of character for Riker. But as it is, he's a great stick jockey.
Mm-hmm. Or a pad jockey, as it were. It never looks that hard to fly these things, you know? They're just like tapping away on those glass panels.
Yeah, on the Tesla screen.
Yeah. You want to fire up Pandora? You like adult contemporary, Geordi?
What this scene sets up, I think, is one of the great scenes in a two-parter full of great scenes, which is Jellicoe knocking on Riker's condo door, hat in hand.
Is there something I can do for you, Captain?
Asking him to go on this mission. And when I saw this episode for the first time, like, as an 11-year-old, this totally stuck with me for the rest of my life. The idea that there's something that you can do about a power imbalance sometimes.
Let's drop ranks for a moment. I don't like you.
Like, in a disagreement with someone, there are times when you can say stuff like this and it is okay.
I don't like you either.
And this scene between Riker and Jellicoe is amazing. They are like swinging baseball bats at each other.
Yeah. I don't think you're a particularly good captain.
Their assessments of each other's faults are pretty incisive and on point. Like, even Jellicoe has some truth in what he says about Riker.
I was wrong, you were right. You're the best, I'm the worst. You're very good looking, I'm not attractive.
I mean, I think that Jellicoe winds up rounding it up to Riker as a bad officer, but it's really just that their two styles are utterly incompatible.
Yeah.
There's too much humanity in the way Riker operates for it to work for Jellicoe. He is a total chain of command man.
Well, that underscores even more why he chooses Data to be the XO. Like, there is no humanity in that choice.
Absolutely.
It's orders and by the book. And Riker is in, like, a navy blue power V during this conversation. And he never gets up. He remains seated and sort of like reclined in a very comfortable way.
Yeah, the camera never pans down, but I totally pictured that he had one foot up on an ottoman so that he could just show a little sack off to Jellicoe.
Right, and the composition here really serves their differences in philosophy, you know? Like, Jellicoe has rigidly walked in. He remains standing. He remains formal, even though he drops the ranks. Like, and Riker is utterly cool the entire time.
Yeah.
And
Jellicoe hates that Riker is a jazz player.
Yeah, for as much as they're like taking the bark off of each other, Like, they're never yelling. They never lose their tempers with each other. It is cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Chilly.
Yeah.
Ice cold.
Riker's point basically is, I want you to ask me to do the mission. And Jellicoe does. And Riker, with one of the bigger shit-eating grins he will get on the show, is like, I'll do it.
I like that Riker and Picard are both rocking deep Vs in this episode.
Yeah. Picard's showing a little bit more bun, though.
Yeah. they fly the mission. It's a tense little scene, and they plant mines on the bellies of all of these Cardassian ships. And then finally, Jellicoe has enough leverage to have a conversation with the Cardassian that he gets the upper hand in. And they talk on the FaceTime, and this is like maybe one of the few like out and out fails of this episode is that the bridge of the Cardassian ship is total season one level. Like, we don't have the budget to build a bridge of a ship.
We don't have the budget, or we don't know yet what a Cardassian bridge looks like.
Right. So we'll just we'll put up some sheet metal with a little texture on it, little design, you know, and give it some moody lighting, but that's as far as we're able to go.
It's interesting and disappointing that Jellicoe gets the upper hand here, not through any sort of intellectual way, but in sort of a warfighting way.
Every one of your ships has a mine on its belly, my finger's on the button, and you're in a very bad position.
Like, the leverage he gets is mines stuck to ships.
Yeah.
And it is
he's
not...
Like, he's like, one by one, you guys are going to walk out of that nebula, kick your sidearm across the floor toward us and leave. Yeah, I've got a gun to your head. It's not a I outwitted you.
Is Jellicoe's failure his fault, or is it Admiral Nechev's fault for assigning him that mission?
Oh, like, did she set him up to fail?
Yeah, I mean, because as loathsome at times as Jellicoe is, I mean, in the Crimson Tide parlance, he is also right in many ways.
Yeah.
In much of his decision making, like, I feel like it's a failure of the Admiralty to put him in that spot because he is so unfit for it. He is so overmatched at every point. The only way he wins is militarily.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is like a very current dilemma, right? Like, do you let the Russians take Crimea and, you know, not heat up a war surrounding it, or is everything a potential prelude to war? Which, like, you know, both seem wrong, and both seem right.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
One of the last scenes in the episode is back on Cardassia, and Madred and Picard are sitting across from each other, and
we know that at this point, Picard's safety has been arranged for, but
as sort of a throw-in between Jellicoe and the Cardassians. He's like, yeah, kick your guns across the way, and then he sort of ways them.
One more thing.
Yeah, exactly.
it's weird because it just cuts right to Madred and Picard, and Madred is singing kind of the opposite tune. He's saying that the Enterprise has been scuttled, and that Cardassians have taken Minos Corva, and he's basically giving Picard one more chance to make a moral stand. You know, and if you tell me there's five lights, you can, you know, you can have the kind of like gentleman's arrest, you know, where you get to live in the Tower of London and have a yeoman, and books and food will be brought to you.
In prison, dinner was always a big thing. We had a pasta course, and then we had a meat or a fish.
You'll have a pretty chill life, but you'll be a prisoner nonetheless.
It's a very good system.
Or, you know, conversely, we can put you in bedlam, and you'll be a victim of torture for the rest of your life.
The Riley Factor is on tonight.
So, your choice, bruh. And it's a, you know, it's a choice with it. Like, he, as far as he knows, he doesn't have any chance of being rescued at this point. So there's no downside to breaking, but other than just abdicating his own sense of sanity.
He has the choice of collar in prison, basically. Do you prefer the blue or the white? And as he's replying, the door opens, a couple of Cardassian goons walk in, and they're like, dude, we got to transfer this guy back to the Federation. Like, why isn't he cleaned up yet?
It is so interesting to see Madred's status lowered.
Yeah.
He is not the boss of that guy. Like, Lamech is a higher ranking dude than Madred, and that is fascinating because, Madred seems like the apex of the pyramid for so much of this episode.
Yeah, apex predator, for sure. And it turns out he's just a middle management asshole.
Right. They start hauling Picard away, and he screams at Madred that there are four lights, and then, he bats the Cardassian's hands away. He's like, I know the way. He walks out.
You know, as horrible as all the scenes are between them, I will miss seeing scenes of them together because they are so great. Like,
yeah.
You can't beat the sort of tension that is generated between two fine actors in a situation like this.
Yeah, they're amazing. I mean, they're given, incredible dialogue, and they are giving very challenging roles, very nuanced roles, and, they're just so good. They do a great job with it.
You get an episode with dialogue like this, and then you get an episode before it with, 70 occurrences of Exocomp in it. Yeah. So, Picard is transferred back to the Enterprise. There is the transfer of command back to Picard from Jellicoe on the bridge.
That was nice to give him the ship
formal.
Back.
And Picard shows up, he's still got the bags under his eyes. He is still a little bit hobbled from his experience.
At least he's got that After Five shadow dealt with.
I liked seeing Picard with a little bit of that beard. Around, season six.
It's amazing to think about the time period that all took place over, given what kind of growth we're looking at. a week max, maybe 5 days.
Yeah.
Would be my guess.
It'd take me a couple weeks to push out that much facial hair.
I don't think that you and Picard have precisely the same genetics, though, Adam. Sorry to say.
Now I'll keep my hair. Thank you very much.
Well, the button on the episode is Picard kind of wordlessly nods to Troy, and she follows him into the ready room, and he admits something pretty upsetting about the four lights thing, which is that before he knew he was going home, he was going to, not only was he going to say that he saw five lights, but that he really did see five lights.
There's that intimacy between Picard and his crew that is yet another contrast between him and Jellicoe, which is all he has to do to get Troy's attention to go to the ready room with him is a glance.
And Picard, has kind of a reputation for keeping his people at a distance, but it's nothing like what Jellicoe does.
He needs her in a way that I don't think we've ever seen before, and it's great.
Sometimes he's been a little resistant to mental health help, and in this, he's just this is something I'm really going to need.
Yeah.
Did you notice that they never show the lights in that last scene? So my mind goes in the direction of, they could be adding and subtracting lights whenever they want, right? They could just replicate a new light and have it beamed up there.
That's meta-torture, isn't it?
Yeah, that's gaslighting, is changing somebody's reality in subtle ways to cause them to question their own senses, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that it was very deft that they never shoved a little insert of the lights in there, because they had that footage, but they had the restraint not to do it.
Yeah, I think when you're given the choice, you just keep the shot on Patrick Stewart.
Let it sizzle.
Yeah. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I love this episode. I'm really glad that this isn't a normal kind of episode, because I think that this is a tone and a level of tension that so much contemporary sci-fi goes for and never wants to leave. And I like that this is the salt that brings out the sweet of the rest of the series, you know? Like, this is... this is something that can happen in the universe, but is not the routine of the universe.
I agree.
How about yourself?
I think this is as good as this show got in a lot of ways. But for as good as part two is, I still, in a strange way, prefer part one. And I would have preferred a third part.
Yeah.
You don't get a few scenes here that I would have liked to have seen. One of them being Riker's side mission to go pick up Worf and Beverly from the Ferengi freighter. What must that have been like?
I would love to have just had a scene with Riker and Troy, maybe, while he is relieved of command. You
right.
know? Like, what's he going through? How does he feel about that?
Yeah.
How does she feel about that, you know? As a crew person who has to serve under Data now, what does that mean to her?
A great episode, I feel like, could become greater with a little more shading like that. But there's just no time, you know? If you're committed to a two-parter, this is what you have to do.
Indeed, Adam.
Like, how scary is it for Riker to get into a Previa, leave the Enterprise as it's facing off against a Cardassian ship, and then just go across the galaxy on a pickup mission, like on a milk run?
Yeah.
Like... there's a tension in that too, but we don't get to see it. And like the despair of seeing a Worf and Beverly far from home after a failed mission. Like, you get a little bit of that in Six Bay when Beverly's on the bio bed. Jellicoe's like, sorry, Tiger, we really tried. And that's like, that's all of the aftermath of the mission you really get from Beverly and Worf. You get so little Worf this episode too.
Mm-hmm.
That...
yeah.
You know, the inner turmoil that he must feel about leaving a guy behind has got to be so acute. He's got to be destroyed by this. Like, all the little devastations among the crew, you could spend a little bit of time with, and I think you could add them up into a level of hopelessness that might equal what Picard's going through while being tortured. Yeah. But maybe that's just a depth that they were unwilling to go for on a show like this, and I get that.
Worf has a little bit of evident shame in that Six Bay scene, but yeah, mostly he's just a background character. Adam, I read that they thought about making this a three-parter with Rascals and actually torturing young JLP.
I want to say there are four lights!
Why aren't the lights flashing?
Make them flash! I want them to flash now! Send me back to Commander Riker!
Yeah, I mean, you gotta really wonder if Madred has the stomach to torture a child. That'd be pretty fucked up.
What's that animal your daughter had? I should like to play with it too!
Adam, do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages?
Yeah, I think we should do that.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Sam. And it is for Adam and Brad and Big Rod. The message goes like this. Brad, there are five lights. Ella is the worst. You are still our best friend, Sam, Adam, and Lily. And this podcast was paid for by Big Rod. Thank you, Adam and Ben.
What? Did we just take money from Big Rod without knowing it? Who is this Sam? How does he have dispensation to give us Big Rod money?
Is this one of the many Doohan children? Is this Sam Doohan? Maybe we've accepted Big Rod money and we don't even know it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. We're not like set up the way a political campaign is where we can vet all of the big dollar contributions and make sure they're not coming from sources that would be embarrassing to the candidate. And like, there's a certain amount of anonymizing that happens when somebody purchases a Jumbotron. So all that is to say, as far as Adam and I are concerned, we remain untainted by Big Rod. And if somebody from Big Rod needed a favor from us, we would not comply.
I think there's a fair amount of plausible deniability about whether or not we've accepted Big Rod money.
Yes. That would be anathema to us. Adam, we have another Priority One message here, and it is from Plavim. It's for Raz's wife? Oh, no. Oh,
please be good. Please don't say something awful.
In brackets here, it says, please play Barry White-type music in the background, and it says... Happy birthday, Claudia. I'll never forget our nights at sea together. Oh.
Oh, no.
I'm back off the Raz and Plavim train, man.
That was the entire message?
Yeah.
God, you know, say what you will about what Raz and Plavim are, how they use our message service, but they're very efficient in their messaging.
Yeah.
Straight to the point.
Oh, man.
And just like that, a new character has been introduced into the Raz and Plavim verse.
Claudia, there's a new star in the Raz and Plavim firmament. I actually got a tweet from Plavim the other day, and he said that his wife has instituted a rule that for every Priority One message he procures, he is obligated to give the same amount of money to charity. So at least there's that comfort in this.
That'll help me sleep at night. Good thinking.
It's just better than nothing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, if you have an ongoing personal drama that you would like to have the world know about, you can take that business over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages of the type Raz and Plavim enjoy are $100, and commercial messages are $200, and they are one of the best ways to keep the ongoing production of our show moving. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Take important stuff, stack it up. Doesn't give a fuck, everybody's drunk. And Tasha Yar's getting robot humped. Ben, no! Drunk Shimoda!
I did. This is a very hard episode to find a Shimoda in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give it to Gul Madred, because there are more than a couple moments in his performance where he is embarrassed or defied in some way. And like, the two obvious ones are the one where Picard says that he finds him pitiable, and the other one is when Gul Lamech comes in and is like, hey, bub, what the hell? His performance of embarrassment is so good. It's so in character and yet contrary to everything we know about his character. I really enjoyed that part. And as long as the drunk Shimoda is the character having the most fun, I feel like that was probably like the funnest thing to try and figure out how to do as an actor inhabiting that role. How about yourself?
I am going to give my Shimoda to Jellicoe. I think one of the key components to a Shimoda is like the lack of self-awareness. And I think Jellicoe embodies that perfectly in the moment that he transfers command back to Picard. So they've done the handshake thing. Picard's back as captain. Jellicoe stands relieved and he's like, well, you got your ship back just as good as you left it. And then sort of under his breath, he's like, maybe a little better. And then like, And then just walks up the horseshoe into the turbo lift and leaves forever.
Yeah,
and
like that... he's not shaking anybody's hand or like wishing anybody a fare thee well.
That little, maybe a little better, was so exquisite. Like that line reading was perfect. It was perfectly not self-aware. Like it was coming from a guy who truly believed that and couldn't have been more wrong.
Yeah.
But like such a great parting shot too. Like as he lurches his way into the sunset. Like, good on you, Captain Jellicoe. Like, go back to the Cairo. Enjoy the rest of your career.
Yeah.
Thought that was great. Yarmouk, Angelad, and
Tanagra. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 6, episode 12, Ship in a Bottle. A calculating Sherlock Holmesian character traps Picard and others in a holodeck simulation. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I really don't, Ben. This is one of those ones that I don't feel like they replay this one very often. Either on the reruns.
Huh.
So, sort of coming up blank on this.
I definitely remember and like this one. I am looking forward to watching it.
Yeah. Let's do it. This is going to be one of those treat episodes that feels new to me, and I love that.
Yeah, it's good times. All right, well, that will be our next one. We should thank all of the people who go to MaximumFun.org/donate and support our show. The people who go to MaxFunStore.com and buy our merch. The people who go to gach.biz/mail and sign up for our mailing list. The people who go to iTunes and leave glowing reviews. We're up over 1,200 now, Adam.
We have so many people to thank. 1,200 reviews? It's bonkers.
It's bonkers. If we had as many reviews as we have paying supporters, we would be nearly double that. So, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
We should also thank Dark Materia for our theme music, Adam Ragusea for our supplemental music, and our myriad viewers who take to the internet to discuss our episodes. They can do that over at Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. We're also on Reddit, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
We are not on Instagram or LinkedIn, but we are on Wikia. There's a great Greatest Gen wiki that you can contribute to and read up on jokes. If you missed the introduction of a running character, you can like forensically go into what that character's genesis and characteristics are. It is an amazing resource that we don't deserve.
Ben, there's no shortage of podcasts or websites that write about or review Star Trek The Next Generation episodes, but I feel like ours leaves that universe a little bit better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like the campsite rule.
Yeah.
Or the Captain Jellico rule. So with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that is a dream within a dream.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.